America and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host with the Mud, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Chris Logi. Say hi, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah, it's just going to be us two this week. Teresa's family is out going, getting their second shots and getting vaccinated. And, well, they're going to be feeling the after effects of that. So she's going to have to be tending to them. Teresa already got her shot a while back, I think. And I think they're just now getting it. But, yeah, like I said, I've had the second shot, and I didn't really have, like, any serious, you know, like, nausea or headaches, but I did, you know, have the freaking the energy sapped out of my body for a couple of days. But, so it's just going to be us two. This week, well, we got some really good news and we got some really bad news. That's holy shit. Over this week, shit in Israel and Palestine deteriorated really fucking fast.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, that region has been a tinderbox for a while, but this week, it just fucking nosedived into the ground faster than we've seen in many, many years. And we'll explain why. And how weirdly enough, for the first time, this seems to be the first time that the mainstream media in the U.S. has realized, hey, maybe it's not a good thing that the Israelis are trying to bomb all these people in an open air prison back into the Stone Age. Like, are you getting that sense?
Yeah.
Like,
they don't need to just be both sidesing it.
Yeah, like, there's clearly an aggressor in this, and it's not the Palestinians. But we'll get more into that, because, again, as with everything involving Israel and Palestine, it's complicated. But we have some other news. In fact, we got some new CDC guidelines revolving masks, specifically if, like me and like Chris, you're fully vaccinated. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're going to want to hear that if you haven't already heard it, because it's good fucking news. Yeah, we've also got some other stuff news, including, what happened when the Colonial Pipeline shut down, and it basically, it was a temporary shutdown, and basically it caused a gas shortage that caused basically everybody in my fucking state to lose their goddamn minds. Pro tip, don't try to store gasoline in a trash bag. It's just not a good idea. Really, it's a bad idea. But we'll be getting into that later. And of course, we got a bunch of entertainment news to talk about. But before we do all of that, we need to basically talk about, you know, the stuff we do as we always do. Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Not really too much. The weather has been a bit better around here, yeah, so okay. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part. Though it's the last few days have been like, oh, it's freezing cold in the morning, and then it gets up to the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing where it's like, okay, if you gotta go out early, you know, you gotta dress to be warm, but then you're just sweating bullets by the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing, so you gotta be ready for that, but it looks like we're getting to about 70-degree weather here for the next week or so. So that's finally starting to feel like it's supposed to be May.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of being this weird fake spring weather.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing. But yeah, for watching stuff, haven't been really doing too much there. I have been watching some My Hero Academia.
Mm-hmm.
Still in season 2, but gotten to the part where they're actually doing sort of an actual tournament. It's still been really good so far. They do a really good job of dealing with the stories for each person going into the fights and during the fights and all that. Sort of telling you more about the origins of these characters. Because you learn a little bit up to that point, but is where they kind of go more into that. So it's some good lore stuff there. But yeah, that's been it for watching stuff, really. Playing games. I've been playing some more of Subnautica, as well as the new Below Zero that just came out on PS5 today. They just released the PS5 version of the original game. So that looks and runs a bit better without me having to do any sort of console code stuff to kind of force it. But yeah, it looks really good, both of them. Below Zero definitely has some things added on top. Things like, you know, there's sort of set in a like Arctic area, so there's a lot of snow, sort of ground that you can actually get on, instead of it just being completely water areas. So there's a lot of weird stuff with that. So you have, since it's an Arctic area, its temperatures are a concern. Mm-hmm. Of sorts, depending on where you're at, as well as like the bits I've seen outside of the water, shit like hail happens. I haven't seen if it has any like damage attributes to it, but I have been like swimming near the surface of the water and seeing the hail kind of hitting into the water, that kind of stuff. That's a really nice touch. There's some of these weird penguins. But instead of their beak being where, you know, where penguin beaks are at, they're on top of their head. So, like, they can just, you know, swim around with their mouth open like that to get fish and that kind of stuff. And I can also pick up the baby ones, which the adult ones do not like. They start coming after you, that kind of stuff. Probably the biggest disappointment is we're talking about the support for the DualSense, haptic feedback and all that kind of stuff, and it hasn't been there in the first hour or so that I've been playing. I was reading the PlayStation blog post about it, and it might just be tied to certain items, which is weird. I would have figured, you know, you start the game crashing into the ground, like there would be rumble and that kind of stuff there, but there's nothing. Which I was just confused by. Because any other game that supports it, you know, they have at the very least some sort of rumble, but Subnautica and the Below Zero don't seem to have any of it, which is a big disappointment for games that try and build themselves as such. So I'm going to play some more to see what the heck is going on, but right now it's a bit disappointing on that front. Let's see, I've been playing some PBA Pro Bowling, which is in the new PSN sale. It's from Farsight, the pinball arcade people. So it looks really nice, especially all the ball physics and that kind of stuff, the knocking of the pins, all that kind of stuff looks really nice for that. And the controls are a bit weird because you're using the right stick to kind of do a back and forth motion where you're kind of so before you launch it, you know, you're doing your thing where you're aiming your arrow, trying to figure out where to start from, what sort of angle you're going for, that kind of stuff. So if you're doing the very basic, you know, non-hook kind of throw the ball, you just, you know, pull the stick down, push it up when you get the meter all the way, that kind of stuff. If you're trying to do an actual hook, when you kind of pull it down, then you have to do like a hook motion of sorts. So you can kind of do one that's like a slider one for just more of a slight hook, or I assume more aggressive hook for you know, the sort of stuff that actual pro bowlers use. Because you don't see many of them actually just like, I'm just going to throw this ball in a straight line. Kind of thing. You don't get that far if you're playing like that, but that's what I'm kind of doing early right now. It has a career mode, which is more just a series of challenges. Some of them are just, hey, you got to get a higher score, or you're, you know, competing against other players, and that can be a bit tough if you're not getting it right away. But I found a pretty good angle I can go for to, at the very least, set me up for some easy spares. But also, when I really nail it, I get some good strikes in there.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. There's the those you're earning these tickets that you can use in the shop to buy new balls, which they have a bunch of different designs, but they unlock when you level up your like overall like account level, I guess, kind of thing. And some of them come with weird little quirks to them. If you're playing the arcade mode, they might have even more aggressive ones, but I've put it on simulation, so the ones that are like, every time you get a spare, you know, you get 50 tickets.
Mm-hmm.
I have one that's like, oh, if you get a turkey, which is 3 strikes in a row, you know, you get a bonus amount of tickets, that kind of thing. So there's a bunch of weird little perks to them for bonus. There's tickets, there's gold pins, which are the like premium currency to it that you can use to unlock stuff right away. But if you, I assume if you beat certain pro bowlers, you unlock them as playable. Otherwise you're playing mm-hmm. as your own like user character, but you don't even really have any control over that. It's just like, oh, it's a male, male or female, or it's left or right-handed. That's it. No real design there, which is kind of disappointing, but they might have already put out a sequel to this, so but it's on sale for like $7.50 right now, so I was like, I'll check this out. I haven't played a bowling game in a while. So I've been enjoying it so far. The way you kind of set up your bag of balls is pretty interesting. It unlocks more slots as you level up, that kind of thing. But you have one that starts with, and you have 2 more in the bag.
Mm-hmm.
So like there's one I pull out when I'm set up for a spare that it automatically does that.
Mm-hmm.
There's one that it just pulls out for the other times. I haven't figured out what the third one, because I had this one that's just like a, it just looks like a steel ball.
Yeah.
And it can just go fucking fast as hell. I'm not sure if it's telling me miles per hour, but it's like, this is going like 24 miles an hour down the lane. It's like, Jesus Christ, it's so fast. Because they have different stats to them, you know, speed, hook, and control. So you get the ones that can really do a good hook, or you get the ones that are fast that just go hilariously fast, or you have the very basic ones. They're like, here's the one that just, I think it tops out at like 17 and a half miles an hour, which is what I started with, because that's all you have, are just these very basic ones. But you work your way up to the more ridiculous ones that you can see how fun the explosion of pinballs or pins looks.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, it's pretty wild the way it works. So that's a pretty nice little game. And also been playing some more Rocket League. What do you want to say, Brandon?
No, I was saying go ahead.
Okay. And I've also been playing more Rocket League as I want to do. I didn't really do too much last week with it. Because a lot of the challenges were, you know, trying to get wins and all this kind of stuff. And I was just having a bad streak of ridiculous losses and all that kind of stuff. So, but this week, been playing more, having more success. I was still having some rough times as I just finally got ranked in there. So I still need to put some more time into that. But just been having some weird-ass matchmaking, which happens when you're doing the initial 10 to get your ranking set up, as it throws you into some different kinds of games. But even playing in the casual, you could tell when the good players are in there because they're actually playing like a team.
Oh, yeah. They're
competent players versus just
the
random ones that are just like, oh, I'm going to go after the ball. All this kind of stuff. So,
yeah, I have never played a game where I felt more outmatched than when I played Rocket League. Because, yeah, it is definitely like, yeah, you can definitely tell like a difference in competence compared to, you know, whoever it is you're playing against versus whoever is playing with you.
Yeah. At least with casual, when you can just quit out without any sort of penalties. Yeah, you can also move over to like the 4v4 if you want to just see where all I think the actual casual players are at, because it's just pure chaos to play with 8 players in an arena that's meant for 6. As you got, you know, two or three other people going at the ball at the same time on each side, as well as all the boost pickups are harder to get because everybody's constantly picking them up. That kind of stuff. But yeah, it's still a lot of fun. Yeah, they just put up their NASCAR pack that is $20 for three different cars and a bunch of different cosmetic stickers for them. Mm-hmm. Tailored after a number of different drivers. Mm-hmm. So you can get that. But yeah, that's been pretty much it for me. How about you, Brandon?
Yeah, well, as for me, I'm playing more of Streets of Rage 4. I finished, obviously, the main campaign because, I mean, the game, the actual story ain't that long. But I'm going back and trying to get, like, all the different secrets and stuff that you can unlock. Specifically, I'm trying to get the secret boss areas that you can unlock. For those of you who don't know, in Streets of Rage 4, there's this thing you can do where every so often as you're going through the game, you'll find these like old school style arcade cabinets called Bare Knuckle. And what happens is usually when they show up, there's usually a taser somewhere that you can pick up either from an enemy or it's in like a crate or something indestructible. And what you do is you take the taser and you hit and use it to hit the arcade machine. And then the game will transport you to an old school boss fight from Streets of Rage 2. Or I think maybe one of them is also from Streets of Rage 3. Including Mr. X, the original boss of the original Streets of Rage series. And if you've fought Mr. Y, you know, his son in Streets of Rage 4, he basically uses a lot of the same moves and attacks. That specifically that friggin' machine gun that he uses to not only shoot from one part of the bat to the other, but also to rake across, you know, the whole area. And keep in mind that in order to do this, before you can even fight Mr. X in that particular boss fight, you also have to fight a bunch of regular mooks, and then you have to fight Shiva, who's like his second in command, and then you fight Mr. X, and then a bunch of other mooks come back to fight you with Mr. X, and Mr. X also has that friggin' machine gun. So, you know, not easy to deal with, but I very quickly kind of picked out who my favorite character play is in that game. It's Cherry, because she has probably my two favorite moves in the game. She has in her regular combo set that attack where she jumps up and, like, you know, punches a dude down while she's in the air, which can be problematic, I will admit, when you're dealing with, like, an area that has, like, a bunch of giant gaping holes in the stage that you can fall through.
Yeah.
Fortunately, she has the other move that I really love that is pretty much just probably my absolute favorite, and it's the one where she jumps up onto the enemy's shoulders, punches them, and then does like a, I think, what's it called, like a Frankensteiner or whatever, just flips them over backwards. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Plus, she beats people up with her guitar, and that speaks to me. But other than that, Mass Effect Legendary Edition. Have not yet played it, but I got it loading on my PS4 as we speak. So I will be getting back to you on that. But yeah, that's going to be a hell of a head trip because, goddamn, I played the original Mass Effect back when it originally came out on the Xbox 360 on Christmas of that year, like literally that Christmas day. And yeah, I have very strong attachments to that game and that whole franchise. So we're going to see, you know, how this Legendary Edition plays out. Other than that, you mentioned earlier how down there in Ohio, it now feels like it's actually May now.
Yeah.
And that it's getting a little warmer.
Yeah.
I can now tell you that it's very much in the middle of May here because I'm now in the third day of all-out warfare, a bunch of friggin' horde of goddamn motherfucking fruit flies. Do I even need to explain what fruit flies are?
They're tiny little insects.
Yes, they're tiny little assholes is what they are. And they breed like motherfucking vermin. Basically what happens is, usually around this time of year, because it's getting warmer and more humid, this is basically their we gotta fuck everything that moves season. And usually they're attracted to things that are fermenting, usually rotten fruit. Hence the name fruit flies. They somehow, either one or like their eggs or something got into Coconut's cage over here, and then they started spreading to the rest of the house. So down south, we have a homemade remedy that we came up with to deal with fruit flies. You ever heard of this? I'll tell you. You take a cup or some sort of disposable cup, and you take some apple cider vinegar. Don't have to put a whole lot, just maybe about a quarter of the glass. A quarter of the cup. Then you put in some dish soap, like maybe a tablespoon or so in there. Mix it all up, and you take some plastic wrap. You put it over the cup. Then you take a rubber band to stick around it, so you know the plastic stays on the cup. Then you poke a bunch of holes into the plastic. The flies are attracted to the scent of the apple cider vinegar because, you know, it's vinegar. It's fermented. And what happens is once they get in to the cup through the holes, they can't get back out, and they get smothered by the fumes from the dish soap. Only trouble is this takes a couple of days for it to start working. But it's starting to work. I see a few of them in there right now. But yeah, they're annoying little bastards. And we have to deal with them every damn summer. Just one of the things that makes living in the South just so wonderful, really. Between this and, you know, the destructive weather and the meth. It's just magical. Anyway, all right, you got anything you want to add before we move on?
No, go ahead.
Okay. It's everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Rad Factoid. And because we're going to be talking a little bit about it in the show a little bit, I think it needs to very quickly just sort of tell everyone how this whole thing with Israel and Palestine actually started. Because despite what some people will tell you, that this is like some ages-long battle that has been going on for centuries, not really. The specific issue that exists now is actually very recent. And by very recent, I mean it's literally within the last century. But to very briefly just go over, you know, the story thus far. Israel is mostly made up of historic Judea. Judea has basically been thrown around with a bunch of different empires through history. It was taken over by the Babylonians, who were then given independence by Cyrus the Great. It was then taken over by the Romans and became part of the Roman Empire. The Romans and the Jews kind of sort of got along okay. I mean, every so often there had been a rebellion. Like there was the story of the Maccabees, which, you know, is where the story of Hanukkah comes from. And then there was this dude who was a carpenter, came out of a city called Nazareth, and got nailed to a cross. You've probably heard of him. His followers started a religion, and that started a bit of a conflict between the Jewish population, because the religion he started was largely originally a Jewish one. And then that particular religion, which became Christianity, eventually got out of the Jews and eventually made its way to the top of the Roman Empire. Yada, yada, yada. The Roman Empire collapses. Middle Ages come about. Then it ends up getting taken over by the Muslims. I don't think it happened in Muhammad's lifetime. It might have. I don't know. I'm not very fuzzy about that. All I need to know is that for a long time, there were a bunch of Muslims that were living there amongst Christians and Jews as well. And the Muslims built a bunch of sacred sites all over there. Then they started encroaching onto Christian lands. The Pope said, Hey, we need to have a crusade. That's where the crusades came from. A bunch of crusader kingdoms come in, start taking over bits and pieces. Saladin, who was a sultan at that point, invited all the Jews back into the Holy Land. This pissed off some of the Christians. Crusades again, et cetera, et cetera. And then it ended up getting absorbed into the Ottoman Empire. So that's pretty much the story you need to know up until World War One. World War One happens. The Ottoman Empire collapses while that's happening. After the war ends, the British come in. And I'll be completely frank, you can basically blame a lot of the Middle East bullshit that happens these days heavily on the British. Because they're the ones who basically partitioned up entire parts of the Middle East with no regard for culture or history or whether or not there were other people already living there or not. And one of the things they did was they got Israel. And so Israel became a British mandate. And as you can probably guess, the people who were already living there were like, hey, what the fuck? What are all these Europeans doing coming into our country all of a sudden? So you got that. Now, at the same time this was happening, there was another thing that was happening. You see, after the French Revolution and Napoleon became Emperor of France, one of his most famous edicts was the emancipation of the Jews. He was the first person in Europe to give full equal rights to the Jewish people within his empire's territories. This set off a whole thing that happened that would eventually inspire other parts of Europe, and eventually the Jews are no longer second-class citizens. They are now equal to Gentiles and Christians throughout Europe. Unfortunately, the reactionary parts of Europe did not take kindly to this, and so the Jews became even bigger targets for anti-Jewish pogroms. So a bunch of them started creating this idea of a movement called Zionism, which was the idea of Zionism had a different branches to it, and it's really complicated, but a big part of it was this idea of creating a Jewish homeland. And now, what we call Israel wasn't necessarily the only idea they had. There were other ideas as well. In the Soviet Union, Lenin created the Jewish Autonomous Region of Oblast, which is actually still around, believe it or not. That was like an idea of like a place where Jews could go. But a lot of Jews wanted to return to what they considered to be the birth of the Jewish people, which is Israel. And so a bunch of European Jews, British included, started making their way to the Jewish Mandate of Palestine. Now, as you can probably understand, these Europeanized Jews, and I'm going to point out why that's important in a moment. These Europeanized Jews started making their way to the Holy Land, and they started, building their towns and their farms and their synagogues and all this stuff. But there was a problem. You see, I mentioned they were Europeanized Jews. And the thing about Europeanized Jews is Europeanized Jews carried with them Europeanized ethnic prejudice. And as you can probably imagine, they did not look kindly upon the regular inhabitants of the Palestinian territory. So, as you can imagine, there were race riots, there were shootouts, there were conflicts. It was an ugly scene. Then World War II happens. And World War II fucking changes everything. Because with World War II, we got the Holocaust. And after the absolute horror of the Holocaust was revealed to everybody who saw it, there was a sort of general ideas like, look at this shit. We can't deny the Jews a homeland after this. Just look at all this. Would you deny the Jews a homeland after seeing all of that? I don't think you would.
No.
No. So you can understand the mindset when people were like, okay, yeah, the Jews should have a homeland. So the United States government started supporting massive immigration for Jews to the homeland. But there was a conflict. You see, at the time, Israel was still a mandate of the British Empire. And the Brits had started a policy of limiting British Jewish immigration to the mandate of Palestine because they were afraid that there was a whole bunch of decolonization that happened at the time, and the British government was afraid that the whole empire would collapse if they kept doing it. As you can imagine, the British and European Jews that lived in the British Mandate of Palestine didn't like this, so they ended up starting a guerrilla campaign that did straight up go up to terrorist tactics, including the infamous bombing of the King David Hotel that ended up killing 91 people. But ultimately, Israel got its independence. 1947, Israel is an independent country. And once that happened, the whole goddamn Arab world lost its fucking mind because they had what they conceived of as a white British colony right in the middle of the Arab world. And keep in mind, this just happened after all the shit they had to deal with after the British partition of the Middle East. So this then causes the Six-Day War. And somehow, against all odds, the Israelis manage to come out of it. They end up expanding their borders. They end up recapturing Mount Sinai, you know, the Temple Mount, which is a big fucking deal. And after that, the people had to figure out, okay, so what about all the Palestinian the natives of this place? What are we going to do? So they decided they were going to sort of create these areas, these sort of autonomous regions in Israel. And if you've ever seen a map of Israel now, you'll see them. It's usually these big blotches of land that were originally made up in 1947. It didn't last long because, again, by 1950, Six-Day War, they started chomping up a bunch of them. One part of it completely disappeared entirely. And now we have these two little splotches. The Palestinian Authority over on the right side of the country, and this little narrow area called the Gaza Strip. And the thing about the Gaza Strip is it's basically an open-air prison. You can't get in or out of it. Those people are literally trapped there. And that, as you can imagine, Palestinians who live there did not take kindly to this. And by the 1960s, you started seeing groups like the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine, Palestine Liberation Organization, all of these various groups you started seeing in the 70s. You started seeing groups like Hamas, Islamist groups. You had Democratic Front is a secular Marxist organization, largely Marxist, Leninist-oriented resistance, whereas the PLO is largely just a secular resistance that is very super pragmatic. And that all leads to today. There have been, I think, three or four intifadas that have happened in between that time. It shows really no signs of stopping, and that's going to lead up to what we're going to be talking a little about today. And that has been another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid. And that's a pretty, I guess, the best summary I could come up with for why this shit goes down.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, with that out of the way, it's now time to talk about our assholes of the weekend. Yes, Israel is one of them. But we'll get to that. First, we need to talk about the four cops that killed George Floyd because they have now been indicted on U.S. civil rights charges.
Yeah, so this is sort of a federal charge that's being made against them compared to the state charge that happened in Minnesota. Charge accuses them of willingly violating the black man's constitutional rights as he was restrained face down on the pavement and gasping for air. It's a 3-count indictment unsealed Friday. Names each of the cops that was involved in that. Yeah, Chauvin's the only one that's been convicted on state charges at the moment. I think the others are set for state trial on August 23rd, it says here. It's not clear what happened in that case, but yeah, generally the state charges play out before federal charges do, so they're kind of probably waiting for that to play out before they announce any sort of sentencing for this stuff. But it's definitely a sign of what the Justice Department is prioritizing under the Biden administration.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see how this all goes, but
yeah, I would like to think
some sort of a result for them.
Yeah, some sort of retribution for them, because those, you know, I mean, you know, as far as Chauvin is concerned, I mean, he's going, probably going to jail, but the other dudes that just sat around and, you know, just stood around and let it happen and did nothing, they deserve some kind of punishment.
Because yeah, well, two of them are any one of those, body.
Yeah, I mean, any one of them could have stepped in and told Chauvin to knock it off, and they didn't.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. And here it goes. Here we go, folks. This week, the Israel-Palestine conflict took a goddamn nosedive after the Israeli government started foreclosing on a bunch of homes and literally just driving people out of their homes and attacking a bunch of sacred sites. And I think this was in the Gaza Strip, isn't it?
There and
and the other part, the
old city in Jerusalem.
Yeah, there
are just people basically stealing others' homes.
Yeah, basically, is they're sort of calling in like a some sort of like property agreement that was signed like back in what was it, like 1937 or something, maybe 1973. It's been like a good 50 plus years, and now they're deciding that they're calling it in, and they're legitimately like going in. This is no exaggeration. They are literally going into people's homes, snatching them out, throwing them out on the street, throwing out all their property. They are bombing the hell out of these cities. Yeah. It then increased there, and now Israel's military is, I'll just say what it is. It's a terror bombing. They are terror bombing Gaza.
Yeah.
That is straight up what it is. They are terror bombing Gaza. It's basically the bombing of Guernica all over again. And the reason, the justification they're giving is because, you know, Hamas keeps firing these unguided rockets into Israel. And obviously a few people of Israelis have died because of those rockets. One of them is a 6-year-old kid.
Yeah.
But I don't think this is in any way, in any metric, a kind of equal retribution by any standard.
No.
And just apparently
entire buildings because there might be some bad people in them. It's not really a smart move.
No. And what amazes me is that for the first time in a long, long time, that seems to be what the rest of the world's opinion is too. Even like here in the US, where the media always fucking takes the side of the Israelis, they're actually like, no, this doesn't look good. Like it's so much so they're actually like questioning the Biden administration on it. And for the record, the Biden administration is doing really badly at trying to justify this shit.
Yeah, it's a whole thing where the Israel has, you know, the U.S., U.K., number of top countries sort of backing them no matter what.
Yeah,
and they're not doing those countries any favor.
No. Now, there's another angle that I think people need to also understand about why it's also heating up so fast. And it has a lot to do with Netanyahu. You see, Netanyahu is currently on trial for conspiracy charges and corruption charges. He also has not been able to form a proper government for a couple of years now. And it looks like he's, and on top of that, he's refusing to resign as prime minister. Usually what happens in a parliamentary system is if the prime minister fails this many times to form a proper government, they usually get the sack. Well, he's not backing down. And it's looking like he might be wanting to call another snap election. So, obviously, this right here would have been the perfect opportunity for him to try and deflect from the shit he's having to deal with. And I want to be honest. From what I'm hearing, a lot of people in Israel itself are kind of realizing that, yeah, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know how this is going to end. My hope is that because, I mean, this is the first time where the majority of the world is against the Israelis on this. And I don't think there really is no way forward for the Israelis except backing out of it.
Yeah. Admitting their mistakes.
Yeah. But I want people to also understand, when I say that Gaza is an open-air prison, I mean that in the most literal way possible. Gaza is the most policed, is probably one of the most, how can I describe this? If you are a Palestinian, you can neither get into nor get out of Gaza. All the people who are in the Gaza Strip right now cannot leave. If they try to leave, they will be shot. It is the closest comparison I can give is to the Bantustans in South Africa, old South Africa, when apartheid was still policy. Because that's essentially a very similar idea. You give they create this sort of what's supposed to be like an autonomous region where you then herd all of the minorities that you don't want into it. Then you steal it off. Keep it super poor and constantly starving. And whenever anyone tries to leave, you shoot them. And whenever you think they're getting too uppity, you send in a death squad or two to try and kill a bunch of random people so they'll shut up. That's basically what the Gaza Strip is.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Fuck the Israeli government and fuck what they're doing to the Palestinians. It's a goddamn travesty. And again, it's not some age-old conflict. This is a very recent one, and I'm sick of hearing that stupid fucking justification. But anyway, moving on from there, we also have our other assholes of the week, which is the Republican Party or the GOP, because the GOP may have more or less signed their death knell this week when they ousted Liz Cheney from her top post in the House of Representatives.
Yeah. They put up another woman, I think Elise Stefanik, mm-hmm. who's very much a Trumper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she went out with scorched earth. You know,
mm-hmm.
She said here, if you want leaders who will enable and spread his destructive lies, I'm not your person.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, you have plenty of others to choose from. That will be their legacy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Kevin McCarthy talking about that, saying, I don't think anybody's questioned the legitimacy of the presidential election. I think that is all over with.
Yeah, didn't he just do that like a week ago?
Yeah, Trump released a statement saying the fraudulent presidential election of 2020 will be, from this day forth, known as the big lie.
Mm-hmm.
Which, that's what everybody else is calling it, that the GOP keeps pushing that somehow he is not the legitimate president.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, apparently,
which has prompted like a bunch of people in the party to petition them to recant these, you know, stupid claims of election fraud, or else they're going to start their own party.
Yeah. Which, I mean, if that happens. Yeah, that if that happens and it gains enough steam, that is basically the death knell of the Republican Party. Because you'll now have Like, if you'll now have, like, a viable, like conservative party that's not so completely over the rainbow loony like the Trumpers are, and yeah, that basically divides the conservative vote.
Yeah, like, right now, they would have something like 40% of the people.
Yeah.
As their base, Dems probably have, like, 50%. There's like a 10% margin between them, yes, of independents and such.
Yeah.
And dividing that even by like, you know, 10 to 30% would limit their ability to get any seats in Congress, the president, even state houses.
Yeah. So, yeah, good job there, Republicans. Yeah, that used to be the party of Abraham Lincoln. Now look what you turned it into. You basically just killed it.
Yeah, keep going.
Keep going. Because you be this fucking myopic. History is not going to look kindly on you. But now we go on to our other last asshole of the week. And it's a person we've had as our asshole of the week before, simply because she's just the worst kind of person. It's unfortunately someone from my state, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, who you probably noticed she hasn't really been in the news lately, and that's probably getting to her because now she's started this weird thing where she's stalking Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez so that she can get her to debate her on the Green New Deal.
Yeah, being like, oh, we should do a pay-per-view style. It's like, nobody's going to fall for that.
Yeah, and it's, first of all, AOC has no fucking obligation to speak to this woman. You know, because she's a bully.
It's hard for that, too.
Yeah, she's a bully, you know, and you don't acknowledge bullies.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly, Marjorie Taylor Greene thrives on negative attention, and that's what she's trying to do. And keep in mind, this is not some, like, thing where she's suddenly in politics and she's doing... No. There's a fucking pattern of this behavior going a few years back. And here's one of them. People actually found this old video of her and friends at AOC's office doors back in 2019, where they were, like, you know, opening up the mail slot in her door and going, like, AOC, you're there? And... like, I mean, you know, all they were missing was, like, the beer bottles on the fingers and going click, 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 you know, like fucking warriors or some shit.
Of course, people figure out at least one of the people she was with was somebody who's involved in the insurrection.
Yeah, and is actually in custody as we speak, because he was one of the people who was identified as being part of the beer belly putsch. So,
she is... very much has a pattern of harassment here.
Mm-hmm.
To which, Nancy Pelosi is suggesting the ethics group sort of look into the situation.
Mm-hmm.
All that kind of stuff. I would say they should go to the point of expelling her.
Yeah.
For this shit, because this is not what people in Congress are supposed to be doing.
Yeah. Keep in mind, I mean, they might as well, because she's not really doing anything else. They already stripped her of all of her committee assignments.
Yeah, she's touring with Matt Gaetz.
Yeah. I mean, she's basically dead weight at this point.
She's there to be the physical embodiment of the Trumpers that were at his rallies.
Yeah. And it ain't like that Matt Gaetz thing is going to be able to last very long either, because he's probably going to prison not too long from now.
Representative Cori Bush has requested to move her office because she's right across from them and saying that she and her people are harassing her all the time.
Yeah.
Like she doesn't want it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something you rightfully expect in Congress.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to work in peace and not have people that are the equivalent of the, you know, the evangelicals and their signs protesting, mm-hmm. you know, people being gay and all that all the time, anytime anything comes up that, you know, flusters them.
I'm surprised she's gotten this far with all this bullshit and not gotten punched.
Yeah.
I'm just, or just somebody just holler, just turn around and just smack her.
And she seems like that kind of person that is aiming for that.
Yeah, I guess so. Like she wants, like, so she can play the victim. Yeah. She's trying to bait you into attacking her so she can then play the victim.
Yeah.
But anyway, fortunately, we do have a hero of the week, and our hero of the week is the Department of HHS. What is that again?
Health and Human Services.
Health and Human Services. Sorry, I get lost in the alphabet soup of government agencies. But yeah, the Department of Health and Human Services is now restoring protections for transgender people in healthcare. So
yeah, this is the thing Trump did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, defines sex to mean gender assigned at birth, thereby excluding anybody that is non-binary of any kind in the LGBT community. So that restores that, as their secretary, Xavier Becerra, said, fear of discrimination can lead individuals to forego care, which can have serious negative health consequences. Everyone, including LGBTQ people, should be able to access health care free from discrimination or interference, period.
Yeah.
It seems like there might be some litigation as a result of this, because, of course, there is.
Of course there is. God, can you imagine just how much time this administration has had to waste just to repair all this bullshit that Trump left behind?
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong, I'm glad. Yeah, like, don't get me wrong, I'm glad that they're doing it, but I mean, you consider all the good things they could have done if they didn't have to deal with all this bullshit first, you know?
Yeah.
But, anyway, all right. So with that, we are now going on to the proper show proper. And we got some good news to start off with, because this week, the Center for Disease Control released new guidelines that suggest that fully vaccinated people don't need to wear a mask indoors.
Yeah, which is...
there is a caveat to it, and we'll get to that, but...
there's a big question mark is sort of, okay, so if people that are vaccinated stop wearing a mask, how do you tell them apart from the people that aren't?
See, that's the problem.
That refuse them.
Yeah. I mean, especially theoretically... if
you're immunocompromised to some sort, or just haven't had access to the vaccine yet.
Yeah. Now, theoretically... yeah. You're
safe.
Yeah, now, theoretically, you could, like, if this was, like, and for the record, a bunch of, like, stores and places are still keeping the mask mandate. I know, like, Publix and Home Depot, Target, and a couple others are still gonna require masks when you go in. So, you know, just that blanket kind of thing kind of solves the issue a little bit. But, theoretically... if somebody came with a mask, you could probably like ask them to like present their vax card before they go in the door. But
I don't think that's reasonable expect.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not wallet friendly.
Yeah. I mean, well, like, yeah, definitely.
It's a little too weird card. And bulky of a card.
Yeah. I actually, the vax card, my vax card, I keep in the like slot in my wallet where all my cash is, and it's already bent to hell. I'm just going to tell you that.
Yeah, it's like if there was a smart person designing those things, it would have been credit card sized.
Yeah.
So it would fit in any wallet in a reasonable way.
Yeah. I guess theoretically you could like take a pair of scissors and pare it down a little bit, but it still won't be quite to the dimensions necessary.
Like the thing you would do is laminate it and put it on like a... lanyard.
Put it on a keychain. Make it so that you can punch a little hole in it. You can put it on your keychain. There you go.
Yeah.
Easy. But also, let's be honest, I kind of don't want America to become a papers please kind of country. You know what I'm saying? It just seems kind of weird.
It's a weird subject because it's something that's societally and socially is something that's important.
Yeah.
And it seems like the only way to really signal that you give a damn about other people is just to keep wearing the masks in public.
Yeah. So for now, you know, unless the place that you're going to doesn't require the mask, you're going to probably still be wearing the mask.
And I imagine most people still working are going to still be required to.
Yeah. The good news, though, is if you're doing this outdoors, you don't have to wear a mask.
Yeah.
So you can go outdoor barbecues, go swimming, all that stuff. You don't have to wear the mask anymore. Hip, hip, hooray.
Yeah, hey, if you still want to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're not me.
I still weren't 6 feet away from people. It's like,
yeah.
But if I had a stick, anyway, this is good. Just poke at him and be like, it's 6 feet, fucker. Stay away.
Mm-hmm.
When they get close, he doesn't swing.
Yeah. But either way, this is still good news because we're now at a point where enough people are fully vaccinated that we can drastically cut down on the mask wearing. And that's good. That's good news in any case, really. Speaking of vaccines, the FDA has now approved the Pfizer vaccines for the 12 to 15 age group.
Yep.
This is definitely good news because a lot of kids need that vaccine. Good news there. All right. People, too.
Yeah.
And now the district attorney for Fulton County is seeking the death penalty for hate crimes for the Atlanta Spa shooter.
Yeah. He's been indicted on murder charges. And yeah, the prosecutors are seeking the death penalty for this. Which, yeah, the new DA just got voted in. Said that, let's see, I, along with my staff, made a determination that this office will seek the death penalty. Last year, I told the voters of Fulton County that I could not imagine a circumstance where I would seek it, and at that time, I did not. Unfortunately, a case has arisen in the first few months of my term that I believe warrants the ultimate penalty. Let's see. Further, we have filed a notice that we will seek sentence enhancement pursuant to Georgia's sentencing enhancement statute, commonly referred to as a hate crime statute based on the race and gender of the victims. And I said this is the law's first application in Fulton County and possibly in the state as well.
Yeah. Golly. Yeah. This, I am not a advocate of the death penalty, but I definitely want this guy to go to jail for a while. This guy, I mean, there really is no more to add to that. The man took down all those people like a fucking animal. I mean, what can I say?
Yeah, luckily he got stopped before he could do even more damage.
Yeah. Yeah, well.
Yeah, I guess he's also invading Cherokee County, too.
Yeah. All right, so moving on there. This week, the Colonial Pipeline, which is a pipeline that provides oil for a lot of, for a good chunk of the Southeast, was shut down temporarily by a ransomware attack by a group called DarkSide, which is a fairly infamous collective of Eastern European hackers. And it ended up causing a gas shortage in the Southeast, which basically meant that everyone in my state lost their goddamn minds.
Yeah, trying to buy out a bunch of fuel just to ensure they had it, which is like, it was down for, you know, about the amount of time you would maybe need for like one tank, maybe two if you're driving a lot. But yeah, to the point that I forget which government's branch was announcing this on Twitter, but was announcing basically like, please do not use plastic bags for fuel, which is ridiculous that anybody has to say it, but I think the videos that were going around are from a few years ago. I think from when the hurricane hit Houston a few years ago.
Yeah.
Which is like, you know, stupid in its own right, but also doesn't seem like anybody was doing that this time around. Hopefully not, but people are probably also still trying to use buckets and other kind of stuff, which unless you got a lid on that, it's not going to work out in the end. Maybe not with that, because yeah, just use gas cans.
Yeah.
That's what they're for.
Yeah. And yeah, don't put them in plastic bags. The chemicals and the gasoline will eat away at that plastic. And I mean, in like a good 20 minutes.
yeah. Bags already have enough holes in them.
Yeah. So, yeah, you've seen all those pictures of people who tried to put them in like plastic bags and shit. Yeah, don't do that. That is just asking for a fucking immolation. But apparently we found out that they ended up paying the Darkseid people like $5 million in cryptocurrency before they were finally able to get the fucking pipeline back online.
Yeah, and they claim our goal is to make money and not creating problems for society, which is like, you hacked into this pipeline system.
Yeah.
You thought there was really no issues caused, then you guys are worse at hacking than you think.
Yeah. Also, don't you think that a pipeline should maybe have stronger security software than this? Like, you would think something this important.
You would hope so, but I would think that it's probably something that hasn't had to deal with this kind of stuff that much.
Maybe.
So they maybe not have that much invested in protecting themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously now they would put more money and effort into this.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would bet there are people that are working on their IT and their software. They're like, see, I fucking told you. This shit could happen.
Mm-hmm.
Those people should get a raise.
Yeah.
Because they were not listened to.
Yes, they were. All right. With that, we are now going on to the entertainment part of the show because we got a bunch of Netflix stuff. First and foremost, we got the first shots for Netflix's Masters of the Universe Revelation. That's right, folks. He-Man's coming back.
Yeah. This is the show that's being directed and written by Kevin Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And the arts they've shown so far looks pretty good.
Yeah. It's that
I don't know what to expect out of this story-wise.
It's He-Man. But it is Kevin Smith. Yeah. So.
Yeah, because I would say She-Ra set a high bar for bringing back this sort of series.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how much it's going to be able to stand up to that, especially as a property that is related to He-Man.
Yeah. Well, I remember the whole thing with She-Ra and the Princess of Power was they specifically tried to isolate it from the He-Man property to make it its own thing. Yeah. But, I mean, if they wanted to, they could cross them over. It'd be kind of difficult, though, because let's be honest, they have two very different art styles.
Yeah. Yeah, this seems to be... Yeah, this is run by some different people. The team at Powerhouse Animation.
Yeah.
As well as the animation studio behind the Castlevania series.
Yeah. And you can tell, too, because...
Yeah.
Which, by the way, props to the art team, because, yeah, these screenshots look great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely looks like a high-budget cartoon and not like some of the shit you would have seen back in the 80s.
It does. Yeah, it doesn't look like the old cartoon.
It's like, hey, we paid, some okay artists to make us a bunch of episodes really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And who the hell knows what a story is? Because it's supposed to sell us toys.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm actually really liking some of these character designs for the newer ones.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we'll see how this comes out. We also...
It says it's going to be premiering July 23rd, so we'll be here in about 2 months.
All right. Yep. We also got a trailer for an upcoming anime series called Eden.
Yeah. This one's got some interesting talent behind it. The director for the series is the same director that did Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
I think the creator doesn't have too much to his name. It's a lot of animation and animation rigging, that kind of stuff. But also worked on the Ghost in the Shell 2.0 movie.
Mm-hmm.
So you can definitely tell from watching the trailer.
Yeah.
They definitely put a lot of work into the animation.
Yeah, it's that that kind of hybrid 3D anime style.
Yeah, it's really good looking 3D animation.
Yeah, it looks good. Mm-hmm. It's not it's not too shabby. Not too shabby. And
it's
speaking
out May 27th here in a few weeks.
Yeah. And speaking of Japanese properties, Netflix is developing an animated feature based on Ultraman. Now that's awesome.
Yeah, they are working on this. Let's see his details. Yeah, they've also been working on a animated series.
Mm-hmm.
That is continuing the storyline from the original Japanese series of the 60s.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's that. The film follows Ken Sato, a superstar baseball player who returns to Japan to become the latest hero to carry the mantle of Ultraman. His plans go awry, however, when he's compelled to raise a newborn kaiju monster, the offspring of his greatest enemy is his own child. So that'll be a weird thing.
Yeah. Ultraman is like one of those storied fucking Japanese entertainment properties. It's basically where, like, it and Kamen Rider were basically like the first tokusatsu series, where there's this idea of, like, you know, a dude in a funny costume fighting dudes in rubber suits. What made Ultraman unusual was that his superpower was that he could grow to gigantic proportions for, like, I'm trying to remember what the limit is. It's like 2 minutes and 30 seconds. So, or something like that. So towards the end of every episode, he would get all big and giant and he would end up fighting a kaiju. So, you know, the fact that you had the tokusatsu thing, but also with, like, the kaiju thing from, like, Godzilla and Mothra and all that stuff, it made the series basically, it's a household name in Japan for very obvious reasons.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I guess the animation has been being done by ILM, Industrial Light Magic, so. It's definitely a good crew to put on this kind of movie.
Oh, yeah. They're
not necessarily going strictly for, like, an anime style.
Mm-hmm.
But very much like a stylized look, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. And finally, last show of the night, Adult Swim has okayed a slew of movies based on The Venture Brothers, The Aqua Teen Hunger Force, and, yes, Metalocalypse.
Yeah, that'll be good, because we know Venture Brothers wasn't getting finished the way they had thought they could with the new season, but this might be a way to you know, finish it on their own terms in some form.
Mm-hmm.
And, the vague plot for that is Doc's latest invention will either bankrupt the Ventures or launch them to new heights as Hank searches for himself. Dean searches for Hank. Monarch searches for answers. And a mysterious woman from their past threatens to bring their entire world crashing down.
Yep.
Which seems like a Venture Brothers thing.
Oh, yeah. That's very Venture Brothers-y. As for Aqua Teen Hunger Force,
that already got a movie
I got one movie, and it was actually pretty good.
Yeah, I never saw it.
Yeah.
I think I was past wanting more of that show. Because there are definitely parts of that show that have not aged well at all.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't need a movie of that. Especially as it seemed very heavy on the memes for even for that time.
Yeah, the great thing about the movie is they actually provide a shit ton of backstory. Like, you know, why do those dudes exist? Why are they there? That weird, like, professor dude that keeps showing up, how does he tie into all this? They take all the random shit and actually tie it together and show that there was apparently, like, a plot underneath all of it. And then, of course, there's Metalocalypse. Metalocalypse is getting a movie.
Yeah. I have no idea what sort of story stuff it has to deal with. It's a show I liked a lot, but just kind of fell off of it.
Yeah, it's Metalocalypse, so you know what you're in for. There's going to be lots of blood. There's going to be some awesome death metal. And
like, one of the last things I remember of that show is one of the dudes having an obsession with gilfs.
Mm-hmm.
But the concept of that being introduced into an Adult Swim show is like, all right, sure.
Okay. Yeah, sure. But all right. I do believe we've got ourselves a show, folks. Yeah, we do. So I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question or comment or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. If we're not on there, just go out and get a snack and wait a few minutes, because as soon as we find that it exists, we will be on there. But with that, I have been your host, Brandon Perkins. This has been Let's Weekend. Join us next week, where Chris Elogi will hopefully be there, and hopefully we'll have some more people as well. So with that, I would like to say good night, sleep tight, and once again, as I will continue to say, get your fucking vaccine, please.